Hello and welcome to what is now Season 5 of Pebble in the Pond podcast. My name is Sam Stewart and I am the CEO of the Australian and New Zealand Mental Health Association. Each year, ANZMHA hosts several leading mental health conferences which give us the opportunity to connect with incredible industry leaders, lived experience speakers, researchers, academics and frontline workers as they share fascinating stories and projects which are changing the face of mental health within our community. Listen in as we go one-on-one with these inspiring people and dive deep into their work. It is truly a privilege to bring you their stories. Our podcast episodes may contain content which could be triggering for some people. If you need support, please contact Lifeline on 131114 or visit the Get Help page on anzmh.asn.au. Join us for Pebble in the Pond each Tuesday and let's get into Season 5. Nevin descends from the Taranaki region and many of the Taranaki iwi. Work-wise, he provides Māori cultural support and advice to a range of organisations ranging from government to private through to community groups. With a background in education, health promotion and the Treaty of Waitangi, he works on projects that are designed to inspire passion in people's culture. Nevin is currently a board member of New Zealand's Problem Gambling Foundation. In today's episode, we talk about revitalisation of language and culture, the value of culturally appropriate services, and what Nevin is excited about for the future of the social and emotional well-being of Māori people. Welcome, Nevin. Nevin Borton, thanks so much for coming in and having a yarn with me and sharing a bit of your background, your story, your insights with us and our listeners. I appreciate your time.
Cool. Yeah, great to be here.
Nevin, do you want to give our listeners a little bit of a runway as to professionally, what made you want to get into what you're up to at the moment and how did you come to be in the role?
Okay. Well, if I go back to my profession was, I started off working in education. I have a degree in Māori in education and started off in what we call kohangareo, which are total immersion centres for children, for ECEs, children aged 1 to 5. Moving on from there, I moved into health promotion, primarily in and around smoking, alcohol, drugs. And moving on from there, I went into consultancy, which I've been doing for 20-odd years, and it's had me work on hundreds, if not thousands, of different projects. But each project is education-oriented, something to do with Māori or Indigenous people, and will make a difference in the world. So that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment. I'm on the Problem Gambling Foundation board in New Zealand. And I was put up by that by a board member who was moving on. We were both working in the homeless sector, and she recommended that I stand for their board, and that's how I came to be in Problem Gambling.
Wow. I mean, you've had such a diverse background, but a lot of experience in this. Tell me, as it relates to the Māori, you know, the early years, age 1 to 5, was it, and looking at health, and tell us a little bit about that and... Yeah, and how you found that role.
Cool. Yeah, so it's like a early education centre, as you would have anywhere in the world, but it's the philosophy that they're run by families and using Māori knowledge, Māori practices and protocols to create children who are respectful of their environment, respectful of their culture, respectful of people around them. And I was really, really fortunate to work in that space. And as a male, there were very few male that were working there. I'm kind of 10 more to my mother than my father, and my mother's family are more lovers, not fighters. So we're all about warm fuzzies. You know? Yeah. And you kind of take that warm fuzziness out to the other roles that you have. And I'm really lucky to have been involved in such a diverse level of projects and what we would call kaupapa. And I might consider myself a kaupapa-driven person. That is, what is the purpose? What is the reason to be involved in this project? Is it worthy enough for my time? And it's not that I'm special really, but is it worthy enough to be spending part of my time, part of my life and the gifts that I've been given by my ancestors to warrant putting time into it? And so I kind of judge those things as I go along, and Problem Gambling is one of those places. I should add, however, that I have a direct family member who has had issues with gambling in the past. So it it became a personal thing for me as well as a social good.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit about the Maori population over there in Aotearoa. Tell me about, as it relates to health and well-being, how do you think they're progressing during your time that you've been in the health sector or the education space as it relates to, do you think the health and well-being is improving? Do you think there's still a long way to go with this? Do you think incarceration rates are still too high? The social inequalities still exist? Tell us what the situation's like over there.
Yeah, that's a pretty broad question there, Sam. But if I look at it, if we look at pre-colonial times as our society, how did it operate? Was it functioning well? Did it honour the environment? Did it honour people? And I would like to say that it probably was really functioning well. Post-colonial kind of settlement in Aotearoa, New Zealand, what happened is we have a clash of cultures that comes up. And so that which was kind of a day-to-day practice pre-colonial has changed quite significantly. And what I've seen maybe over the last 200 years is a fundamental disconnect with a lot of the principles and values of what Māori or the Indigenous culture of New Zealand was. And if I look over the last 20, 30 years that I've been involved in the types of projects, is there is a real push for reconnection. We call it the revitalization of our language, of our culture, of who we are in the world. And when we say revitalization, that's revitalizing the language in the home, outside of the home, practices, the protocols, the ways of interacting environment, and taking on a really holistic health approach from the whare tapawha approach, which is where we look at health in our mental, physical, spiritual, as well as our social environment. But we have Māori concepts from that, which is our taha, which is a part of who we are, our taha wairua, taha tinana, taha whānau, taha heningaro, which is a lot deeper than the words mental, physical, spiritual, and social. So we now have projects that are kind of moving towards this revitalization. Are we there? I'd like to think that we're actually moving closer to it than moving further away from it. The last part to that is if we look at what really traumatized many of our ancestors, a lot of that traumatic experiences happened in the mid-1800s, where land was taken, where people were kind of perpetrated against, and our language and our culture was kind of suppressed and undermined. We now are managing and trying to address the intergenerational trauma that's come from the impacts of that. And as I said, it's the revitalization, in actual fact, is a reconnection, who you are, where you're from, what makes you up, whom you've descended from, and what it is you might hand on to the next generation. So we're hopeful, and my great hope is that this will be the last generation that has to hand down the trauma from the generations above.
Yes.
And if I look at the types of projects I'm involved in, I kind of look for change agents in my own family. Whilst there was a disconnect with our language and with our culture, in my generation, we actively pushing to take on bringing our culture, our language back to life. And we hope then that from this generation forward, that will be the new norm.
Tell us some of the programs you're involved with and how you're seeing them implemented as it relates to gambling, some of the work you're doing with the Māori and the challenges that you've come up against in that process.
I'm not a gambling practitioner myself. I operate at the board level, but I did write down some of the projects that I'm involved in at the moment. And you'll start to see that these projects that make a difference will, I believe, impact on gambling. So just kind of reading them out is I'm involved in a project with a 30-year plan on how we address sexual violence and sexual violation in the home.
Yeah.
And if we can address that and the trauma that comes from that and the impacts that come from that, you know, gambling is a not natural consequence, I believe, of that. So that's one of the projects I'm involved in. I'm involved in census in Aotearoa, New Zealand at the moment, is how can we ensure Māori and Pacifica and the marginalized or the minorities in our country are a part of census so we know where to direct funding and support to. I'm involved in the play strategy in Aotearoa. It's my firm belief that if we can provide our children with opportunities to play, It will set a good foundation for the rest of their life. I'm involved in Māori football, Māori football Aotearoa. So how do we celebrate the indigeneity, well, our indigenous culture inside of the game of football, and how can we bring together indigenous nations around the world to celebrate and take on this life that life of football, and to be active? And when I say football, I'm talking about soccer.
Yes.
I'm involved in the zoo. This, funnily enough, the zoo is about how do we celebrate, protect, and care for our environment around us? And what is the relationship that we have as people to the environment? I'm a firm believer that we don't have domain over beasts and anything else, that we are very much part of the environment. We have a role to play. And how can we look after the animals and the other things around us? I'm involved in a local history project with our schools. So how can we tell the stories of our local region so that our children can appreciate them and make their own bond? I like to say that as an Indigenous person of Aotearoa, I have a significant and special bond with our environment around us. However, my bond is no more, no less valid than anyone else's bond. Mm. And so we try and make our stories come to life for children. I deliver te reo programs, which is bringing back the language not only to Māori people, but to non-Māori people as well, and design cultural capability programs in and around that, is building awareness of our culture as it relates to yourself and how it can empower both Māori and non-Māori people.
That's incredible. That's a lot of stuff.
I've got about 7 or 8 different other ones, but I'll leave those.
Do you really? On top of those?
Yeah, I can tell you the other one.
Yeah, keep going. Let's hear it.
So the next one is we are delivering a program to go across the whole of government based on cultural capability, where we design what we call cultural baselines, where you ask the question, what is it that you want everyone in your organization to know within a cultural context? And from there, you create bespoke programs that roll out to an organization, and then you measure the cultural capability of the programs. So doing that, I'm involved with Met Service, with weather in New Zealand, is how do we integrate traditional Māori knowledge into contemporary meteorological services? So, yeah, how do we integrate that into there? I also work with the homeless, so I'm working on housing strategies with a local organization down there. I'm writing a book.
Wow, what's that focused on?
I had a brain tumor in the year 2000, and after the brain tumor, I had a brain infection, and after the brain infection, I had a stroke.
Wow.
And so the book is the journey of going through those things from the perspective of the person who went through it, from the perspective of my mother, my aunt, my wife, and my siblings, kind of, you know, because we all experience the same thing. So what happened was the same, but our experience of it very different. And so what we're trying to do is to write this book for people who are going through life-threatening, I nearly died 3 times as part of it.
Wow.
People who are going through life-threatening illnesses, how might a book like this support you? And the last thing I've got here is I work with Pounamu. So Pounamu, New Zealand Greenstone, is very special. And in our country, when we build a house or we create something really special, we like to bring it by life, by giving it a life force, by giving it an essence. And greenstone is one way of doing things. So I work with organizations to install the life essence in inanimate, in like things like buildings, things like projects. Yeah. So.
Is that through the stone?
Yeah, that's through the stone.
Is that right?
Yeah. So the stone, so within a Māori context, everything has a life force and a being. And it's a bit like when something changes its form. So a tree is a tree, and the tree has its own life force. But then when you cut down the tree and turn the tree into a house, you've created a whole new purpose for that tree. And so what you can do is you can grab what we call a pounamu and give the tree a whole new purpose as a building. So you create something, and then you kind of, it's kind of like putting a heart into
something.
Yeah, and then you ensure that the that the tree now, which has a different purpose, is kind of brought to life.
Yeah, it's incredible. So you do that for buildings and stuff.
Buildings is one of the things. So I would work with an organization. And then what you have to do is you have to align the building with an overarching purpose that is worthy of giving it a heart. So not everything gets a podium, not everything gets a Māori, not everything gets a heart, because, you know, sometimes a general building is a general building. But if you want to give it a really special purpose, you have to design it in such a way that it will honor that purpose. So its overarching purpose has to be significant enough to warrant doing all that work. And then the name of the building has to align with the purpose, the look, the feel, the shape of the building once again, and then that would warrant a pounamu, that would warrant a Māori, a life force essence.
And then it has a special aura about it, That's incredible.
It just makes it special.
Yeah.
And which really supports it to be able to deliver on the overarching purpose.
Yeah. That all makes sense. So you're a busy person with all that stuff going on. How do you prioritize what you're doing with your time?
Good question. I'm fortunate enough, how I roll in my family, so I have four children.
Yes.
And how we operate is that I pretty much work full time. I would, in general, 14 to 18 hours a day, I would suppose, probably 5-6 days a week.
Oh.
On these types of projects. And these are just my professional projects. And then I have personal projects outside of these as well, different things that I'm involved in. And so we have an understanding. My wife supports me to be able to do this. So she feeds me and looks after me and looks after our home, which alleviates the need for me to have to worry about our home. I have a personal PA that schedules stuff. She will send me through texts if I have urgent emails. I don't take phone calls from people I don't know. I ask people to text me. So I have all these little kind of systems.
Set up. Yeah, good.
Yeah, because I'm not the best. Funnily enough, I'm not the best organized person, but I have the ability to work across a number of projects in relatively short bursts. And so I just kind of have a scattergun approach over the day. Most of my day is broken down into 15-minute little bursts.
Yeah.
With things, because I get bored with things really quickly. So 15 minutes and I'll be full on, but like us today, I'm full on here right now at the moment. And then I'll walk out of here and I'll be completely into the next thing and I will pretty much have forgotten about what we've just spoken about, because I can't hold it all in my head at once.
Yeah.
But I can be really concentrated on one thing for 10, 15 minutes.
Yep.
Well, sometimes it rolls out, but in general, people kind of know that with me, and we just schedule in.
Good on you.
Yeah.
And mate, tell me a bit about the PGF, Problem Gambling Foundation. Tell me about the stuff that they do and some of the challenges that you're facing over there with this.
Yeah. The Problem Gambling Foundation, I'm not one that knows about the whole history, but I can definitely tell you about some of the really great things at the moment. In the tenure, I've been on the board for 6 years now. The last 2 or 3 years, an amazing thing that has happened is Problem Gambling Foundation was seen as what we would call a mainstream service provider in New Zealand. And that became difficult in that we have groups of primarily non-Indigenous, and then we have Asian people, and then we have a lot of Pacifica people and Māori in New Zealand. And so what we've been able to do over the last couple of years is separate PGF, or the Problem Gambling Foundation, into three autonomous bodies. We now have an autonomous body, autonomous governance-wise, management-wise, budget-wise, for the Asian community, which is Asian Family Services, AFS. And we have one specifically for Pacifica, for Pacific peoples, called Mapu Māia. We didn't split into a Māori-specific one because there are Māori service providers around the country. And we still continue to service mainstream peoples. Now, that doesn't mean in our mainstream service that we can't work with Asia, Pacifica, Māori people. But being able to allow or supporting Bess and Mapu Māia to move out on their own has enabled them to seek funding that is Asian specific, Pacifica specific, and just to have their own, what we would call their own mana, their own honor, their own prestige, their own ability to govern themselves. And that's been really exciting for me as part of the board. Challenge wise is what does that then mean for the mainstream services that are kind of left, and we're figuring out how we do that. And then how do we still ensure that we can culturally and appropriately service Māori, Pacifica, Asian people through our mainstream service? So that's a little bit of a challenge.
Well, and mate, do you think the services are getting better, or do you think people going through problem gambling are more inclined to seek help than they used to?
I think where we're going through in New Zealand is how do we bring problem gambling, like we do with many of our addictions, out of the shadows so that we can start to have conversations about it. And I'd like to think that we are moving closer to that. As I said before, I'm involved in sexual violence and sexual violation. That again is another conversation that's kind of in the shadows. So how do we bring it out so people can discuss it and start to address it? And I'd like to think that we're moving towards that space. It is a bit hard though when you're in the gambling. So there are still places and spaces where gambling is available, like TAB and pokies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Still have a significant say in how the sector is regulated and all those other kind of things. So it's not as though we're going to get to the point where gambling is no longer an issue. It's more so, how are we going to address it going forward? How can we bring it out and take on ways to mitigate the impacts, I suppose, in a way that still really empowers people and allows us to move forward? So, fuzzy answer.
No, I just find it interesting. I know I was talking to Ashley Gordon yesterday as it relates to, Indigenous and the stigma around, the shame around coming forward to talk about gambling challenges in their own families, in their own circles, and trying to create that space, that culturally appropriate space for them to feel like it's okay to come forward and talk about it, to get some help. But then secondly, making sure that the services available are culturally appropriate to meeting the needs of Indigenous First Nations people.
Yeah, I mean, something I briefly spoke about pre-colonial history is we have to remember that the gambling in the context of how we see gambling today was a foreign thing for our ancestors. It just didn't exist. And so we are now trying to manage something that has been applied, which isn't aligned and traditionally compatible with our culture. And so, it's quite difficult to do that outside of the culture as well. So as you said, the how do we do it in such a way that is culturally appropriate, whilst acknowledging and recognizing that the issue itself is culturally inappropriate,
yes,
and that it's actually been inserted into our culture as opposed to deriving or organically growing from our culture, it brings little to no benefit at all to our people.
No,
and we know that, but we're addressing the issues and the impacts and the ongoing impacts of this which has been inserted. And funnily enough, people are now thinking that, well, it is part of your culture. It's become part of your culture. Well, it wasn't part of our culture. It may be there at the moment. And if we were to be true to our culture, we would take it out and celebrate our culture.
Yeah. What most excites you moving forward about where things are going as it relates to Māori health and well-being? Where do you think things are heading in the right direction, education, awareness around this, to try and get back to pre-colonialization sort of days or back to those roots?
What most excites me is we have a saying at home, which means in English, truly come to know who you are and from whence you originate. Come to see that I am you or me. So what excites me is people knowing who they are, how they're connected to the land. When you know who you are and how you're connected to your land, it enables you to connect with people. So when you connect with people, you'll come to see that whatever you do to yourself impacts on others, and what others do impacts on you. And so hopefully we will be have enough pride in ourselves to start to get that when we make a difference in our lives, we make a difference in the lives of others, and kind of vice versa. So that really excites me that people are starting to reconnect.
Yes.
They're starting to be proud of who they are, of where they originate from, and that it's okay to be Māori.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's, you know, a real benefit to be Māori, and that we as Māori have the opportunity to connect with other Indigenous peoples around the world. And I'd also like to think that people are starting to find out their own indigeneity. I'm a firm believer that everyone is Indigenous somewhere in the world.
Yeah.
We have just become disconnected, whether it be through generation, separation, whatever that might be, with who our original Indigenous people were. And I'm hoping that people are beginning on that journey. And that really excites me about people starting to see who they are, where they're from. Because once they've figured that out, then they'll be figure out how they're related to me. Because we're all related.
It's beautifully put. Yeah, everything's related. Everything happens for a reason. That sort of, it's great to be able to learn from these ancient cultures, and it's great to see. I mean, Aotearoa seems to, I mean, the Māori people seem to be embedding that a little bit better than what we are in Australia, as it relates to, you know, getting the languaging coming back. And I mean, there's so many different nations within Australia for over the years that, and some of that tongue is lost, unfortunately, but still people finding out more and more about their culture as much as they can of what's left of it. New Zealand's doing a wonderful job with this, and you're probably not where you want to be with it. But what do you think are the main focuses moving forward as it relates to Indigenous well-being? Is it more education awareness and ingraining these practices and knowledge into the younger generation so they can carry it on? Is there things like that?
When I talk about knowing who you are, called Waikwe, it's actually twofold. Is one is you ask the question, who am I? And then you seek to find out who you are, how you're related to the land, how you're related to your culture, how you're related to people. The second one is the ability to take that to kōwaiō, which is a declaration. And once you know who you are, you're able to literally say, this is who I am. And I'm hoping that education-wise, that once people get to know who they are, then they'll be able to look at ways of honoring the past, being sound and honorable in the future, and create a future worth living into. You know, so how do we do good on the dreams of our ancestors? How do we do good on our own dreams? And if we can't fulfill our dreams, how can we ensure that we set it up so that the generations that come after us are able to fulfill it? And hopefully that will undermine the generational trauma that we talked about before and replace it. So instead of spiraling down, we start to spiral up and kind of do justice to the hopes, dreams, and aspirations of our ancestors, of our tūpuna, as well as doing justice to the aspirations of our descendants to come. If we look at ourselves as ancestors, if we take today, for instance, what we're doing right here, right now, how are our descendants in 6, 7, 8 generations' time, how are they going to judge this conversation we're having right now? Mm. Will they be proud of the actions that we're doing right here in 8 generations' time? And if we start to think about life like that, is, you know, we think that no one's kind of watching, but in actual fact, like we do right now, we look back 200 years ago and we say, oh, this explorer did this, or this ancestor did this, and it was a real positive thing because this is what provided us in today's world, or it's a really negative thing. I wish they hadn't done that. If we can take that on, if we can be good ancestors in the present, I believe we're setting up a great future for our descendants in the future.
That's very well put. I love the way you said that. You said that tone in that context. It's a deeper question, and actually makes you want to be better today for that when you know you've got people coming after you, that you want to leave the world a better place and be able to get them to fulfill their dreams in a better way.
It's actually really, really simple, Sam. Hand on heart, put your hand on your heart and you ask yourself the question, will what I'm doing right now make a positive difference to my descendants? If you can't say yes, the answer is no.
Yeah.
That's it.
I love the your six words for your life philosophy. Do you just want to tell us, was it my wife, my kids, my life? Was that your...
Jeez, I can't remember. Yeah, I think I wrote that in my bio, you know. Oh,
yeah.
If we can find it, then I can think. But it's you know, happy wife, happy life. And that's the second book I'm going to write. As soon as I've figured out how to make my wife happy, I'll be writing a book and I'll do really, really well out of it. But, you know, my wife is my pillar. She supports me in my personal life and my professional life. And she brought my children into the world, who are my future. So I've got that. And my work is for them. It's for my wife. It's for my children. It's for my mokopuna, for my descendants. And, you know, it's just about being present, being happy in today's world and working on all those things. I'm a little bit caught out because I can't remember what I said.
I think it was something along those lines anyway. I think it was my wife, my kids, my life. But it's been great listening to you and your insights. You are a very busy person. You've got a lot of really good stuff going on. All seems to be for the benefit of others, which is amazing. A true leader in what you're doing. Nevin, if people want to get in touch with you, how would they be best able to reach out?
Yeah, that'd be really difficult.
Okay. Yeah, because you got to text him.
Yeah. It's a little bit, yeah. So
Problem Gambling Foundation, the website.
The Problem Gambling Foundation is the best one, because when I take on projects, I only take on projects through referrals, stuff like that. So if you know someone who knows me, that's a really good way to get to know me. Otherwise, look, yeah, can reach out through the Problem Gambling Foundation. And if we can support you, however that might be, but you just have to be aware that unless it's going to make a difference in the lives of people, there's not much of a chance that we're doing much together.
Yeah. Well, you're certainly a man with a mission and a vision, and mate, we appreciate your time. Thanks for having you on with me.
Cool. Thanks, Sam.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Feel free to share with your friends and colleagues. And if you know someone working in mental health that you'd like to see featured on the podcast, please email any suggestions to us at membership@anzmh.asn.au. You can also stay up to date on our socials at ANZMHA on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you next week.